Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Alicia Sikkim, and tackling your questions in studio this evening is Nick Crail from Ashburton Investments and Bright Kumalo from Vestact as well. So don't forget to start sending those questions through to us via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or pop us a tweet at Business Day TV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us in studio this evening. So another quarter done and dusted, the JSE finishing 5.8% lower, its first quarterly drop this year. How are you feeling as we kick off Q4?
We're still up on the year, so I'm feeling quite fine. I should have just, you know, sold everything and went on holiday. You know, end of second quarter. But yeah, we're up at like 12, 13% at some point. But, you know, it's a new quarter, new possibilities, and anything could happen.
Absolutely. Anything could happen. How unnerved are you by the various PMI prints that came to the fore today? Because everywhere you looked, it was red.
It doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. I think, you know, looking at this picture, it shouldn't really come as a surprise. With the amount of uncertainty that's around the world at the moment, you would expect that, you know, people managing money, people investing capital would prefer to get a little bit of clarity. Yeah. You know, we've said in South Africa for a long time that really what you want is policy certainty, and then you can start making decisions. Before that happens, you kind of decide to sit on your hands a bit. And I think we're seeing that, you know, play out globally as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's two sides to that coin. So you've got the Donald Trump side of the coin, which is blaming it on the Fed and others. And arguably, you have the other side of the coin, which is just saying, listen, it's uncertainty, you know, and trade wars, et cetera, et cetera. The unfortunate reality is we don't really seem closer to certainty, whether it's around trade, whether it's these Hong Kong protests, which are sort of blowing up. There is just a lot of uncertainty and a lot of tension in many areas around the world at the moment. So I think one needs to be cautious in terms of one's outlook. Having said that, you know, if you take the SA equity environment, I think we've been hurt.
Yeah.
You know, so it's you know, we need to have a look what's in the price.
Yeah.
I mean, the market, you know, loves to hate uncertainty, because there's never been a point in time where, you know, I read a book or been in the market where there wasn't any uncertainty. So they like to, you know, hog something and, you know, complain about it. Even if in South Africa we had policy certainty, they will be hogging something else and blaming that, you know, the underperformance on that. So there's always something in the market. Just look for those pockets of opportunities and, you know, just sit on your hands after that.
Is it not, though, the volatility of that uncertainty that's getting investors more so off guard? Because just when you think there's some resolution on a front, the rug gets pulled out from under your feet.
Yeah, look, uncertainty also provides a lot of, volatility also provides a lot of opportunity to go in, especially for me as a young investor with a longer time horizon. So I'm looking, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and even 40 years from here. I'm not looking at, I'm buying this company, I'm trying to, you know, flip it and sell it in 5 years.
Yeah. That on the equity scene, certainly interesting development on the fixed income scene as well, because it's within that context that we've seen foreign ownership, Nick, in South African government debt fall to 37% end of August, and that from about 43% at the end of March. Foreign investors seemingly not convinced that South African risk is worth even the high heels it's boasting right now.
I think that's certainly correct. I would differ with those international investors, and often do. You know, the reality is our yields at the moment are becoming and are very attractive. So in this sort of environment, I think these are just gooder or better opportunities to actually start picking up some of those sort of fixed income assets.
Yeah.
A lot of what I think unnerves markets from a local perspective, we're very much aware of. You know, we haven't seen the rally in our bonds by any stretch of the imagination relative to developed markets, and arguably we should have. So certainly I think if you go back a couple of months, we expect a little bit more structural reform, a little bit more changes, increasing business confidence and personal sort of confidence in the trajectory of our economy. And it seems that that's run its course to a certain extent, where we couldn't really get too much, you know, too much more bearish. The reality, however, is I think we probably are moving in the right direction, slower than we would like, but it is in the right sort of direction. And so when we see these foreign investors running for the hills, it's local investors that start picking up and making money out of these.
I was about to ask, what defines, you know, like an international investor? Because is Africa part of that? I'm confused.
Well, probably because it would be capital inflows into South Africa.
Okay, so we hold our own bonds. Okay, that's very patriotic for us.
No, Africa excluding South Africa.
See, that's what I was trying to understand. What's international, what's not?
Yeah.
But anyways, okay.
Okay, let's take a look at equity opportunity. Which are the best JSE listed shares that one can buy now for dividends and hopefully some growth? I've got Bidvest and Old Mutual in mind.
Yo, which ones are the best? I'd have to, you know,
Scholar.
Exactly, using those, you know, those factors that he's talking about, which is dividend and growth.
Yeah.
So that's like, you know, the perfect 10. It's hard to get a perfect 10.
Okay, so how's Bidvest scoring in your books?
Look, I'll give it a 6 out of 10, maybe 7. But it's still, you know, an SA Inc. stock mostly. They do have other businesses, but, you know, the Namibian side of the business isn't doing so well. It's a well-run business, and it has proven over time, you know, that, you know, the better capital allocators, you know, this is the management, than, you know, other holding companies that we've seen here in South Africa. So, yes, and they pay a good dividend too. So I'd be patient with buying some of, you know, the Bidvest, yeah.
Do you have patience for Bidvest?
I like Bidvest. Simple and easy as that. I think the quality is excellent. I think the management and delivery of strategy over the last, you know, decades has been more often than not marvelous. Mm-hmm. And I think looking forward, there's lots of opportunities for them. I don't think it's particularly expensive at the moment. It is also one of those sort of stocks that where when foreign investors decide to pile in, they go for the quality sort of side, and Bidvest will really see that. So I like that. I think Old Mutual, you know, I like the strategy of Old Mutual at the moment. I mean, it's going through such a nightmare.
You know, there's been too much distraction for it to execute on strategy is a question, though, that has popped up.
Yes, I think it's a fair question. I wouldn't say the CEO runs the company. Ultimately, you need that distraction to come to an end. It has had a sort of disastrous effect on the share price. I think there's some sort of opportunities there. But if you have a look at how Old Mutual's delivered over the last 20 years, you've got to say it's a subpar performer from that sort of perspective.
Yes.
So what you're taking on there is the risk or the opportunity set that they're going to turn things around. It isn't expensive. It is cheap. If they turn it around, you make money. If they continue failing, then arguably you're not going anywhere.
So we're dealing with a very big if here. Mm. How are you feeling about Old Mutual?
Well, Old Mutual has been a turnaround story since I was a kid, so I'm not going to take that risk. I'm sorry.
Staying clear.
Yep.
Okay, staying clear of that. Do you have any views on Grand Parade? It is a good idea for. Is it a good idea for the company to sell its 30% slot stake at the price it's getting? A bit of a turnaround story emerging there, and we saw in its recent set of results that it letting go of
the Crown Jewels. And buying the stuff that's not doing so well. So I'm, expanding more on the, you know, QSR side of things. I'm not convinced. I wouldn't have sold the initial slots to begin with. I just would have probably used the cash. Yes, it would have been slower to get the pickup in the restaurants, but I wouldn't have lost out a lot because where the economic environment is and operating a QSR outlet is very hard. So I know they had like targets that they had, but to sell a very good lucrative business, a sure thing, for a lot of uncertainty makes no sense. Maybe that's why the CEO is leaving.
Yeah. With a hefty payout.
Value or value trap? I think I'd certainly think it's more value trap than value at the moment.
Okay, simple and to the point on that front. Value trap on both fronts. Rebosis and Delta's proposed merger seems to be going ahead. What's the panel's take on that? Of course, this has been a long time in the making. It was off the table, now back on the table. And this, as we see, property players come under a lot of pressure in the current growth environment and consolidation being talked about more so.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure about Delta. It's unfortunate what happened to Rebosis on the other hand, but Delta, no.
But if they merge?
As a combined entity, it's a, I'm on the edge. I wouldn't invest in it if I'm on the edge.
Okay, so uncertainty there on your front, Nick?
Yeah, two problem children coming together doesn't make a perfect solution.
It's a bigger problem.
arguably a greater problem, certainly a messier problem. Something needed to happen, as you say. So, you know, this is hopefully the start, but is this the sort of the magic button that cures all ills? No, I don't think so.
Yeah,
I think it's
combined,
largely
today,
irrelevant, to be honest.
The combined total market cap of the two funds, just over $1.6 billion, and that combined. So, okay, interesting to see developments on that front. Let's shift focus to the construction sector. Your panel, will your panel buy Avenge? Pretty cheap at 1 or 2 cents. Like, whether that's incentive, I don't know. Nick?
No. It's pretty simple, pretty to the point. I think, you know, if you're going to play in a sector that's been under pressure for really the last, let's say, 8-9 years, really post 2010 World Cup, you've got to have a look at balance sheets. You've got to have a look at the ability for those companies to deliver. Mm. Avenge, really, you're taking a, you know, basically a roulette type of chance and saying, you know, what, it goes from 2 cents to 4 cents or 1 cent to 2 cents, you're going to make your money back, but it can as easily just go bankrupt. So I would not be playing those. If I were to go into the construction sector, I think there's really only two places to have a look at. That's Raubex and Wilson Bailey. I'd probably prefer Raubex. It is a little bit early at the moment, but I think you've got quality operators there with you know, a lot of opportunity should we start to see infrastructure spending increase.
Because that's primarily exposure to roads development.
So it has been, historically, it's almost exclusively been roads and the aggregates that sort of have come through to that. However, over the last couple of years, I mean, with SANRAL not really coming to tender at all, you've seen them diversify and really cherry pick, I think, some great assets from other former listed construction companies. And so really, I think they're in the pound seat should we see that infrastructure spend. You know, I was a little bit more optimistic this time last year. We started to see, you know, this infrastructure sort of fund coming through, getting announced. It looked very small, but it's we know in South Africa that we need to spend the money on infrastructure. We've got collapsing infrastructure. But it hasn't really materialized yet. So as soon as you think it's going to materialize, yeah, certainly get involved, but not an Avenge.
How are you feeling about construction in general?
Well, in the wise words of Charlie Munger, I agree with what he just said.
Okay, so ditto there. Before we leave construction, Murray and Roberts, it dropped back today. We've had Hatton finally let go off the bone, I guess, that it's been clutching to. What is the spell for Murray and Roberts moving forward? Is it better off?
I don't know, man. If someone came to me as, you know, the management of Murray and Roberts with such an offer, just take it and leave, you know? It's I don't know what they're holding on to.
That's Murray and Roberts, that is.
Yeah.
Okay, do you agree, Nick?
Yeah, so I mean, it's been a long time coming in the sense that Murray and Roberts management have been fighting this as vehemently as they possibly can.
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose on the bright side, it takes a lot of time away from doing what they should be doing, just trying to actually fight off you know, these sort of advances. So at least you've got some certainty there. Would I have stepped away from it? No, arguably I would have taken it.
Because what it leaves now is a shareholder sitting on that board that already owns a 44% stake in Murray and Roberts, you know, that doesn't necessarily agree with line of strategy moving forward. Is that, how much of a concern is that for you? I was speaking to a broker earlier today and she highlighted that maybe it's good to have an activist shareholder in play.
No, I don't really think so. you knew what their intentions were ultimately, and that was to sort of take it over. And ultimately, as soon as that has sort of collapsed, really, are they really going to stick around with their 44% stake? So your biggest risk here is that they're going to exit. Could they exit to another player that wants to take 44% stake, or alternatively, you sort of drop it into the market, have a look, and is it? In that sort of scenario, it's certainly not a share you want to be invested in until that has been resolved.
Okay.
It sounds like more downside than upside.
Mm.
Let's hit pause on the conversation for now. It's time for a quick break. Keep sending through your questions via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. We're back straight after this. Well, Welcome back. Let's blitz through what international markets are up to right now. Starting off stateside, as you can see there, indices across the board are trading in the red today. And this after data showed U.S. manufacturing contracted for a second straight month in September. That index falling to 47.8, the lowest since June 2009. The S&P 500 down 1.2%, NASDAQ down just over 1%, and the Dow lower by a very similar margin there. Across the Atlantic in the meantime, the FTSE succumbing to trading 0.65% in negative territory. We had prospects of a Brexit resolution working to an extent to lift UK mid-cap stocks. But then we had the exporter heavy index parring those gains due to a stronger pound that took effect. And of course, that negative trend persisting across European markets too. Let's get back into questions. Paid 46 Rand for Capco, hold or sell?
Sure, there's a lot of uncertainty with regards to, I know we keep saying uncertainty, with regards to Brexit and what's happening. So the most recent one with Boris Johnson, or Bojo, is that he's got a plan now and he's figured out a way to, you know, push through his own agenda. But he hasn't said what it is. So again, more uncertainty, you know, the pound weakening, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot happening there. But yes, at the right price, I do believe, you know, there's some value there. Capco has some of the best assets in the UK. And obviously, once that, the certainty, whether they're out 100% or they're not, or as long as there's some form of certainty, that'll start recovering.
So if you bought at 46 Rand, would you hold or sell now? So
I don't know where the share price is right now, but
I haven't checked. We can pull up that graph as quickly as possible there, and once it's up, we can take a look and then maybe get back to you. Nick, Capco?
Yes, sir. I think if you've bought it, I would arguably hold it. There is undoubted value that's there. Yep. Would I be buying it now, even at these levels? No, I wouldn't, because I do want to have a little bit more certainty. So, you know, any sort of times, is it going to be a hard Brexit? Is it not? Is it going to get resolved? Are there going to be new prime ministers, new elections? Is it going to be a new referendum? I mean, it is and has been a mess for some time. So yeah, I would hold through if you've liked that, but certainly wouldn't be buying it.
43, 46.
Yeah, look, in 2010 it was at 33 bucks. It's at 43 rand. That's, it's not too bad. I'd hold as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's your view on momentum?
Momentum, I have no view on momentum. It's not exciting for me.
Okay, let's leave you alone.
So I wouldn't be interested in getting involved at the moment, but I am a lot more interested now than I was, let's say, a year ago.
Why?
I do think that they have, for once, started to get some sort of understanding and some sort of plan on how to turn the business around. Why I'm not getting involved right now is that I want to see execution first before I get involved. So I'm willing to miss some of that upside should that sort of materialize until I get a bit more certainty. But it's certainly looking like a better prospect than it was 12 months ago.
Okay. Signia Euro 50. SIG Euro 50. I've been very patient with this ETF over the last 2 years, but Europe seems to be ticking up, albeit slowly. Is it still a hold? Is that one you look at all?
Not really, but
it's,
I mean,
not a stock.
Yeah. So, so as an ETF, I mean, ultimately you're going into European sort of equity, and in that sort of scenario, you wished you'd bought the US tracker opposed to the European tracker. Yep. If I have a look through Europe at the moment, no, I'm not particularly convinced. However, I think that the times have changed from, let's say, 20 years ago, where you had, you know, where you were listed meant that your revenue and your profit exposure was literally where you were listed. Nowadays, it doesn't matter. You can be listed. We've got Chinese stocks that have no exposure into America at all that are listed in the US. And so ultimately, I think you've got to look at the underlying prospects of the, you know, what that ETF is actually holding. Mm. But as a region, Europe is unexciting.
Yeah. And that also influencing some of the view around Capco. Are Capco and Hammerson a short before Brexit?
I don't know, unfortunately.
So Hammerson, I mean, has been interesting, and I suppose this is where you've got to have some very big, I suppose, You've got to be brave. So if you had shorted Hammerson, let's say 3 or 4 months ago, you've made $1 million and then you proceeded to lose $1 million in the last sort of month where it really has recovered significantly. So there is opportunity there, but I'm certainly not brave enough to try and time that.
Okay, so steering clear for now. This question is for you, Bright. With Bright mentioning investing for the long term, and at some point you said you're contributing towards the president's investment drive by investing a portion of your money in South Africa. What's changed? Or are you still holding the same view of the president's investment drive?
Yeah, I think a lot of the local stuff, as compared to many other markets, there's a lot of more opportunities here in terms of buying, especially in the smaller companies. There's a lot of value, you know, at these cheap prices as compared to, say, going to America or to Europe, et cetera, et cetera. And if that economy, the South African economy, does, you know, slowly pick up, there's a lot of money to be made. Yes, so my personal ETFs for my tax-free savings account is all of it 100% here in South Africa.
Yeah, your view on that, Nick?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, you've got to have an outlook on the country and where we're sort of going. So if you were to take the pessimistic sort of outlook, then really, what are you almost doing here to a certain extent? I think you've got to have a look at finding solutions, moving in the right direction. And certainly there is the opportunity for South Africa to actually turn itself around fairly easily. I mean, we're talking as though it's the end of the world here. And so much commentary is, you know, pushed negative towards this way and is very negative. Yeah. But it's not exciting. We haven't done the right things. We have gone through a period of a bit of a nightmare. Having said that, we've still been growing the economy way too slowly, but it's not like we're in 3 years of 5% type of recessions. We have not really come close to that. And I think we've got the right people in charge with the right sort of movement. We do need to see action, but I do think that it took years for us to get into these sort of problems. It's going to take years for us to get out.
Yeah.
The big thing that we require here really is confidence. And that's what's going to drive a turn as it sort of stands. And I think we're moving in that right direction.
I guess illustrating to an extent some confidence is we've heard reports today that Engen could list on the JSE in the first half of next year, and that to raise funds to upgrade its refinery in Durban, to expand its network as well. Your view on a player like that, if it does come to the fore?
It's a very interesting one, but you know, it's taking a bet on the oil price again, which it's very volatile for different reasons, and I'd have to look at the prospectus then and to have a better view of, you know, what's happening in the, with the oil and their operations and how much they make from retail, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So it'll be very interesting.
Because when you think Engen, you automatically think just retail footprint and think, well, they only here to make money because we don't have any other choice but to fill up, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think looking at it, I mean, I'd be very interested in almost any company that wants to come and list here, ultimately. But it is, you know, it's not just the fundamentals of the company that is very important, but more importantly is the price that it lists at.
Yes.
You know, so you've got to have a look at the opportunity.
Yes.
But, you know, we've seen a lot of failed sort of IPOs internationally, and that's with guys coming with relatively crazy valuations that they can't convince the market is correct. So you come at the right price, you know, everything has a right price, and ultimately we'd like to see some of that confidence return.
Yeah, talking about listings, not necessarily new, but new to an extent, would you buy Naspers or Prosus or both?
I'd buy Prosus. If the exposure I want is purely outside of South Africa, and you know, focusing on the technology side of things, I'd definitely go for Prosus because there you get 10 cents, which is relatively cheap if you look at, you know, at the other countries that it competes with in the tech space. You know, it's a well-run business. It's still co-founder run, and it's a quality business, and you know it's going to be there for the long term. And if you're not sure, you can look other companies that operate in that space that have been there longer than it, the likes of Google, et cetera, et cetera. And you're like, okay, they do have a moat. They might last, you know, longer than some people expect, you know, longer than Yahoo, for example. So yes, I'd stick with Prosus more. And then the question you have to ask yourself is the side bets, you know, food delivery, ride hailing, et cetera, et cetera. We haven't seen any of those, even including the companies that are listed that you were talking about, the listings, and none of them have actually made a cent so far. So you ask yourself, is this a good, you know, way for the managers to allocate capital, or should they just be investing in the same thing that has been successful? Yeah. So then you have to answer those questions, and if you're comfortable at the, you know, the rates that they're bleeding the cash into these things that are never going to make money, some of them, or some of them might be, you know, moonshot ideas. Are you comfortable with that? And then you go for Prosus or Naspers in the other hand, but still Naspers is still 75% Prosus.
Yeah. In the meantime, MECG wants to buy 20% of my Pitumanati shares. Should I sell? I haven't been tracking.
I think it's 5% that you can convert into MCG, which is MultiChoice Group.
Yeah.
So basically, you're leaving the nest of MultiChoice South Africa, and you're going to convert. You have the option to convert the 5% into MultiChoice Group, which is a more diversified business, but is losing some monies in the rest of Africa,
okay,
ventures and in Europe. So you ask yourself again, are you happy with the illiquidity premium that you're getting paid? Because the historic dividend yield is close to 16% after tax. And you can make that, you know, in 5-6 years back, your money. Are you happy with that? Or are you happy with, you know, getting a more diversified company that has a potential, a lot of upside? And you have to ask yourself about the operations of the local business. I know a lot of market commentators have, you know, thrown a lot of cheap shots at the local business. Well, actually, if you rank the local business in terms of profitability, revenues it generates, it's up there with the likes of Vodacom South Africa,
yeah,
and MTN South Africa, et cetera, et cetera. It's a very good, well-run business.
Okay. Stock picks. Let's wrap things up. Nick, on your end.
Right. So I am going to go for a local stock with a high dividend yield.
And
that
growth.
Is high growth, growth prospects.
The stock I'm going to go with is Fortress B. It's a property share. You've got the A shares, you've got the B shares. The A shares effectively guarantee a 5% increase in dividend on an annual sort of basis. The B shares are the ones that take the beating should the overall company, okay, not have the ability to sort of pay that out. But I think where you're having a look at that share at the moment, if consensus is right and you see the B shares actually grow their dividend next year, you're going to be talking around an 18% dividend yield on a forward basis. If you even think that dividend is going to get cut by 20%, it's still in a forward dividend yield of 13%. Assets themselves are, I think, quality. And certainly, I just think it's the right price. It's just too cheap. It's something certainly to get invested in.
Okay, so Nick's staying local, but you're going offshore.
Yes, so I'm going with Nike. Last week, Thursday, they released the quarter one numbers for the 2020 financial year. I like the fact that Nike Direct is doing well. You know, what do all luxury companies have in common is that they control their supply chain, so they can control the experience to the people. And if you've been to New York, apparently, the Nike store there, the experience is just amazing. You don't even need, you know, a card or whatever to pay. You go on the app, it shows you where to find the thing. The whole experience is amazing. And the quality of the items is guaranteed to be better than the competitor, right? And Nike Direct is growing double digits right now, and everyone's going online and they're doing well on that. And as a result, the underlying business is seeing more margin expansion, more flexibility on that front. But it does come at a cost of more marketing. But in the long term, it's going to be, you know, better quality business as compared to just selling through wholesalers.
Gentlemen, and that's a wrap. Let's leave it there. Thanks so much for having joined me at the desk this evening. Of course, Nick Crail is with Ashburton Investments and Bright Kumalo from Vestact as well. We take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. For now, have a good evening. Stock picks. Let's wrap things up. Nick, on your end.
Right. So I am going to go for a local stock with a high dividend yield.
And high growth prospects.
The stock I'm going to go with is Fortress B. It's a property share. You've got the A shares, you've got the B shares. The A shares effectively guarantee a 5% increase in dividend on an annual sort of basis. The B shares are the ones that take the beating should the overall company, okay, not have the ability to sort of pay that out. But I think where you're having a look at that share at the moment, if consensus is right and you see the B shares actually grow their dividend next year, you're going to be talking around an 18% dividend yield on a forward basis. If you even think that dividend is going to get cut by 20%, it's still in a forward dividend yield of 13%. Assets themselves are, I think, quality. And certainly, I just think it's the right price. It's just too cheap. It's something certainly to get invested
okay,
in.
So Nick's staying local, but you're going offshore.
Yes, so I'm going with Nike. Last week, Thursday, they released the quarter one numbers for the 2020 financial year. I like the fact that Nike Direct is doing well. You know, what do all luxury companies have in common is that they control their supply chain, so they can control the experience to the people. And if you've been to New York, apparently, the Nike store there, the experience is just amazing. You don't even need, you know, a card or whatever to pay. You go on the app, it shows you where to find the thing. The whole experience is amazing. And the quality of the items is guaranteed to be better than the competitor, right? And Nike Direct is growing double digits right now, and everyone's going online and they're doing well on that. And as a result, the underlying business is seeing more margin expansion, more flexibility on that front. But it does come at a cost of more marketing. But in the long term, it's going to be, you know, better quality business as compared to just selling through wholesalers.
Gentlemen, and that's a wrap. Let's leave it there. Thanks so much for having joined me at the desk this evening. Of course, Nick Crail is with Ashburton Investments and Bright Kumalo from Vestact as well. We take more of your stock-related questions tomorrow. For now, have a good evening.